I think this is the first year we're doing this at the USPTO version of APLI. And, you know, Mark Lemley usually does it. I've seen him do it at the Stanford conference and at the Georgetown one. And I will admit that I contacted Mark and asked him for his notes just to make sure I didn't miss any cases and things like that. Mark usually has kind of a rapid fire style when he does it and goes through absolutely everything. And in prepping for this, I decided, you know what, like in a lot of areas, the law didn't really change, you know, nothing big in obviousness this year, for example. So I'm going to try to focus on the things where I think there was a significant development, but still try to be comprehensive. And sometimes it's just worth noting that the law hasn't changed in a particular area. So moving along, let's start with one of the more exciting issues in patent law this year. Anyone can guess? Can anyone guess what that would be? That's right, Section 101. And probably the most interesting, so this is the Federal Circuit and the Supreme Court. There were no actual Supreme Court decisions this year, so that part of it should be fairly easy, right? But the interesting Supreme Court cases were the ones where they asked the views of the parties or the ones they didn't decide. And obviously the most significant Supreme Court event in the last year in 101 was the American Axle case. Just a refresher, you had 6 members of the Federal Circuit calling for rehearing en banc in the case. The court was evenly divided, so it didn't actually go en banc. You had 10 private briefs that were filed just at the cert stage, telling the Supreme Court to take this case up. One of the briefs was filed by Paul Michel, Tom Tillis, and former director Dave Kaplis. You had all 3 branches of government involved. The Supreme Court responds by requesting the views of the Solicitor General, and the Solicitor General says they got to take the case up. I'll admit, last summer I was convinced that this case was going to go up, that cert was going to be granted. You had all these people talking about this issue, the Supreme Court asking for the views of the SG. The SG says take it, so it seemed inevitable, and you know, we all know what happened, right? The court changed its mind, and you know, they don't give reasons for not taking a case up. All we can do is speculate. But to the extent I can guess, you know, what happened partway through this process is, you know, the rationale of the Federal Circuit itself, from the district court all the way and through the 2 Federal Circuit decisions that we're hearing, the decision was reheard and substantially rewritten. The Federal Circuit's, the court's rationale switched quite a bit, evolved quite a bit. If you'll recall the original district court decision, this is the case about the axle and ways of attenuating vibration, and the district court said, oh, you know, attenuating vibration is just a matter of applying Hooke's law, and that's a natural phenomenon, and we know natural phenomena aren't patentable, so, you know, this whole thing's ineligible. It's basically an extension of the Mayo rationale, but outside of diagnostics to, you know, other areas like, you know, even attenuating vibration in an axle. I think that's what drew a lot of the initial attention to this case. It's clearly what made some of the Federal Circuit judges nervous. You get Federal Circuit judges who usually don't vote to take 101 cases en banc, who did vote to take this one. I think it was because of that reasoning. I think what changed at the Federal Circuit, though, is the initial Federal Circuit decision used more of that Mayo type analysis of like, oh, this is all based on science, so, you know, so it's ineligible. And then especially on rehearing, the decision changed quite a bit, and it changed to more of an O'Reilly v. Morse rationale that, well, you know, it's not so much that it's based on science, it's that in this case they're claiming this result of attenuating vibration, but without saying how to really do it. They're not claiming the actual steps. And, you know, at the en banc level, for example, Ray Chen concurred in the denial of rehearing en banc, really emphasizing heavily that rationale. And the Solicitor General's brief in the case also acknowledged, you know, this isn't really an Alice case. This is more about this other line that of jurisprudence that's really a separate issue about being able to claim effects or results and how that doesn't qualify as a process. So I think that was part of it. But again, we can't really know. There's another factor that I think played a role that I'll get to later. But first, let's talk about the Supreme Court making it up to us. Well, we're sorry we didn't take American Axle after creating all those expectations, but here's 2 new CVSGs for you. You know, maybe we'll take one of these other cases, right? The 2 cases are Interactive Wearables and Trope v. Travel Sentry. They're kind of odd cases. In both, I'd characterize the claimed invention in both as insubstantial.